I'd worry about it if it was a goalie that I was worried about how he could handle that market or Canadian market or, you know, but I just don't have those concerns with Jacob Markstrom. Like, he's not a guy who's going to crumble because of the pressure or because questions are being asked about the second round. I don't think he's a guy who's going to change his game.
Welcome back. It's the Big Show in the morning on your Tuesday, getting your week started, coming out of the Labor Day weekend. Boy, I hope you enjoyed it. My name is Matt Rose. Nick Alberga joins me, and very excited to start hour three of the Big Show with another guest. We go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to talk to an old friend, and I hope he's had a lovely summer. Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and also covering the Canucks for NHL.com. Good morning, Kevin. Good day. How are you, man?
I'm good. It was an excellent summer, and if there was any question it was over, it ended with my 9 o'clock skate last night. So first time back on the ice, survived. But yeah, that's if not the fact that I've been at Canucks skates, some of the informal skates last week, then that was definitely it. No more surfing, all about hockey now. So summer's over, ready to go back to work.
Well, you go from that to an 8 a.m. Vancouver hit with us here in Calgary. Like, that's basically NHL season.
7 a.m. for me,
oh,
boy.
Yeah.
This is ugly. I didn't get to bed till about 1 last night. So, yeah. I'm like, I got basically like tape on the eyelids right now, and I'm injecting coffee into my veins as we speak. I'm ready to go, though.
Well, we appreciate it, man. It's been a wild off season. This weekend was particularly wild for Canucks fans, I would argue. The future of JT Miller was shrouded in mystery until it wasn't. He signs a 7-year extension, $8 million is the AAV. He's going to have that kick in after the upcoming season. But just a thought, your initial reaction to JT Miller signing a new deal with the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, I think it caught everyone by surprise in a couple of ways. One, big piece of news, odd one to drop at 6, or I guess it's 3:30 our time on a Friday night, so it sent a lot of people scrambling. We haven't actually had a chance to talk to JT Miller, so we're actually going to do the media on this 4 days later this morning. I think JT's at 9 a.m. our time, followed by Patrick Alvin down at the rink at 11. So kind of an odd way to announce what should have been your biggest signing of the off season. Just kind of drop it into where you typically do bad news drops and let it fizzle for the weekend, but he's back. I think a lot of us are surprised that they got it done, surprised they were willing, not that it has anything, not that he's not worth the contract, not that he's not, especially right now and in the front end of this deal, not that this is necessarily a bad contract, but you know, this is a team that has talked a lot about the cap crunch that they're under since new management took over, Jim Rutherford in particular, wanting to do two things to improve this team. Upgrade the back end on the defense and free up cap room. And they were completely unable to do anything in terms of improving the back end this summer. They doubled down on some improvements up front instead. And they pretty much just kicked the cap crunch down the road. You know, Bo Horvat still to be, it is early here. Bo Horvat still needs a contract. Obviously, you know, as much as all the focus was on JT Miller and pending unrestricted free agency next summer, that's the exact scenario their captain now finds himself in. And, you know, where do they find the cap space there? And even if they do, because they've been upfront all along about wanting to have Bo Horvat back as a cornerstone of this team, how do you build the rest of it out? Like, I'm curious to see how this goes. I don't have any answers. A lot of people have been very critical. Like I said, the front end of this deal doesn't look that bad to me at all. They almost seem like a team that it's not so much outscore your problems on the back end, although it feels a little bit like that. Like, come on, Thatcher Demko, and everybody else score a ton. Because the top nine's exciting, and they brought in Curtis Lazar as a right shot center on the fourth line, something they missed when Brandon Sutter was unable to play. Because of long-haul COVID, should help the penalty kill. Like, there's a lot of positives, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of what this team looks like. Like, the window's now, I guess. They're in win-now mode, and they didn't make the playoffs last year, and they haven't made the playoffs, once in the last 7 years. So there's pieces there, but I'm not sure this is a contending roster, and you're all in on it again. And I guess what people are having trouble with is that didn't seem to be the formula under this new management. It didn't seem to be a formula that they were interested in. And I guess at the end of the day, at this point, the new group seems to be doing a lot of things that the old group was doing. And so we'll see how this works. Maybe some improved structure under Bruce Boudreau will be enough to sort of improve things on the back end, not leave Thatcher Demko hung out to dry on a regular basis back there. I mean, the guy didn't make it through his first season as a number one because of injury late in the year. Can you find him more rest, not just in terms of starts, but in terms of within games? Or is it going to be more of the same? And right now, at the end of the summer, it sure feels like, with a couple of upgrades here and there, more of the same.
Love me a Friday night news dump, Kevin, and great to talk to you once again. Connor Garland and Tyler Myers, I think the clock is ticking on those two, and certainly Jim Rutherford, I believe, was quoted as saying sort of next summer they're going to worry about the cap. And I do think they're going to find a way to re-sign Bo Horvat here, but is it fair to say that you don't subscribe to the record when Gabby Boudreau came in? Because I think the one thing we've learned about Bruce Boudreau in his career, he gets his team to the postseason. When he gets there, it's a different story. But do you subscribe to how different the team looked after the coaching change?
Yeah, and hey, and listen, that line right there, we'll worry about the cap next summer. Like, those are the kind of, and this is where I think the fan base gets nervous, or certain aspects of the fan base, because we've heard that a lot. Like, this is a team that kicked the can down the road on the cap for a long time, and that's how they got to where they were. All their young players may be ready to take off, but not necessarily. You know, like, they're in win-now mode with the team that you're not sure can win now. So, and in terms of Boudreau, I don't know. Truth is probably somewhere in the middle. I'm not sure that they're – I think that was 107-point pace they were on. They're certainly capable of that. They're going to lean heavily on goaltending again. But, again, like there are question marks there. I'm a huge Thatcher Demko guy. If not for the defense in front of him and the fact that most of the voters don't – being GMs don't really look at analytics and sort of weight shot quality, I'd have him on my Vezina ballot, I'd be placing bets early in the season on him having a chance at that. But again, they wore him out last year. He didn't finish the season. And then at the end of the year, Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin were very pointed about not extending Boudreau. I mean, he's back on basically the second year of the contract he signed last year, but there was no extension there. And they were very critical of the lack of structure. They were critical of practice habits. And I think a lot of people in this market took practice habits to be players. They thought that was directed at the players and the culture. I think it was directed more at the coach based on conversations with some assistants who interviewed for the assistant jobs that ended up opening up with Bradshaw leaving to go back and join Tortorella in Philadelphia. It was all about structure and practice plans. And so as much as good as they were under Boudreau and as good as the vibes were, from an X's and O's standpoint, from an execution standpoint, from a practice habit culture standpoint, management wasn't happy with how it went last year. And so I'm curious to see how long this marriage lasts, frankly. If they play at the pace that they finished last season on, he's here for as long as he wants to be, as long as they can continue that pace. Because just making the playoffs, seems to, and this is, again, something that frustrated the fan base. That seemed to be the goal for so long, just get there and anything can happen versus build a team that gets there every year and has a real shot. Getting there will be enough for him. But, and again, like, I sound like I'm being critical. Like, I think this team can play, maybe not at that pace, but good enough to get in the playoffs. And still, the question in the market is, that's middle 10, right? Like even at that pace, what were they? I think, that would probably be flirting with the fringes of the top 10 in the National Hockey League. Do you want to be a top 10 team? Do you want to be a middle 10 team? And there are some people that look at this roster and look at the back end and look at some of the question marks around the cap and look at some of the holes and feel like at best they're middle 10. And I guess we'll wait and see, because if they're top 10, then hey, good on you. You doubled down on the right things. If it's middle 10, man, you're locked into this roster for a while yet. Because as much as you say Tyler Myers and Connor Garland on their way out, like, moving overpriced defensemen, even if they're big and right shot, is not an easy thing to do. Not on that contract. It won't be easy till after this year when the contract becomes a little more movable. Because at the end of the day, he's a four and at times a third pair guy. And as far as Connor Garland goes, like, what did we see this summer? Like, in a depreciated market for scoring wingers. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the problem here. The pieces they would like to move, they would have liked to have moved off of to create cap space, aren't pieces that are commanding the type of return they hope to get, or are more difficult to move, or have been more difficult to move this summer. And the other reality is, outside of Jack Rathbone coming up from the farm, this is the other sort of strange part of this equation, is there's not much coming. Like, you're not backfilling these spots, especially on the back end. You're not backfilling these spots with homegrown talent, because what they've got in the system that might get there is still years away. There's not a lot of answers waiting down the road with the Abbotsford Canucks right now.
Yeah, that's the one thing I'm looking at. As we're talking about a Tyler Myers trade, like, all of a sudden you're looking at, okay, OEL and Quinn Hughes, and then, ooh, it's Dermott, it's Shen, it's Burrows, it's Rathbone, who doesn't have a ton of NHL experience. And if you're a team that is trying to, I guess, trend towards playoffs rather than not playoffs, I just have a lot of questions about this blue line, even with Tyler Myers there. You subtract him in some sort of cap dump, you're not bringing in a better defenseman for less money. And this is a team that, further to what you've just said, like, I wonder what they want to do this year and if this blue line is going to be able to kind of help them to that point. Like, you got a great goaltender in Thatcher Demko, but he can't do it all himself.
Well, he's asked to on a lot of nights. The reality, though, is if, like to me, the great teams get buy-in. Like, defending isn't just about defense. It's five guys working together. And as good as the Canucks were under Boudreau in terms of attacking, and improving in that regard, most of their defensive metrics still remained in the bottom of the league, except Thatcher Demko. Like, the raw numbers look fine because they were bailed out by the goaltender. The numbers I look at, like Clearside Analytics, and in terms of, you know, what they were actually giving up, it didn't get a whole lot better. It was just, come on, Thatcher Demko. So, yeah, I think those questions are fair. But again, then I look at the top nine. Listen, rolling out a 1-2-3 at center of JT Miller, Bo Horvat, and Elias Patterson, as much as I do have questions about, like, hey, if Elias Patterson's the best of the three defensively, is that really a great mix? But 1-2-3, I mean, it's not the Edmonton Oilers in terms of McDavid and Draisaitl 1-2, but it's a pretty good depth chart 1-2-3. And, you know, again, like, there's, when you surround them with a lot of there are a lot of different ways this could go in terms of what the top nine looks like, and it's going to be on Boudreau to find the right mix real quick with Mikheyev coming in, with Kuzmenko coming in. How do they fit in? Where do they fit in? Nils Höglander had a down year last season. You know, I mean, if you look at the depth chart right now, he could be a fourth liner to start, which says, A, your depth is vastly improved. But again, we talked about improved depth last year, and it was all a matter of the coaching staff finding the mix that would get the most out of them. Well, Travis Green didn't. It's on Bruce Boudreau with a different mix to be able to push all the right buttons early, because I do think this team is going to be somewhat offense-reliant, despite all the talk about improved structure. I don't know, between the personnel on the back end and some of the players up front and their underlying defensive profile, yeah, I'm not convinced that this is a group that can play defense at a top half of the league level. And, you know, as much as we're switching to an offensive league, you still have to be able to take care of your own end. And I'm curious, again, I feel like I'm being super critical. There's also a lot to like on what this rod, like, the way they finished was, there was a lot of buzz in this town, and there was a lot of energy around, you know, Bruce, there it is, and all the results. And maybe if they can just pick off right where they left off last season with an elite power play, with good depth up front, and Thatcher Demko, before he got hurt, playing at a high level, maybe none of this matters. Maybe that's good enough to compete and get into the playoffs. And we saw what Demko was capable of in the playoffs a couple of years ago, and maybe that's enough. Maybe I'm wrong. But I just think, big picture, long term, there are at least, as much as JT Miller should have been an exciting day for this market, it was for a lot of fans, it also created as many questions as it did answers.
Yeah, and simply put, you're only as good as your goaltending, as you referenced Thatcher Demko. Let's turn things locally in a former Canucks netminder and Jacob Markstrom. Now, we've had time to decompress things over the last couple months. What was your read on what transpired specifically against Edmonton? Because you look at last year's regular season, Markstrom was phenomenal, 9 shutouts, a 2.22, a 922 save percentage. And then you look at his numbers that he wrapped up with in the postseason, a lot of the damage being done by the Edmonton Oilers, 2.95 and a 901 save percentage. What happened, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I mean, nobody was criticizing him after that Dallas series. As much as all the attention was on Jake Oettinger, he was in a tough spot at the other end. It's always tough as a goalie watching the guy at the other end stand on his head, and you're not that busy. Your mind can go a lot of places, and if it goes to, oh, man, this guy's good, I better stop the next shot, or you start thinking about what happens if the next one goes in, that can get dark in a hurry. And so I was really impressed with how Jacob handled that first round, and honestly, it's still sort of hard to figure out. I think without Tanev, I just think they got a lot more exposed, and we can talk all we want about great goaltending, but this is why I have the concerns about the Canucks. It can only do so much. If the environment becomes unpredictable in front of you, then goaltending, again, even at a Vezina Trophy level, like Jacob was for most of the season last year. And don't forget, I had some worthy Vezina Trophy finalists, but when you post 9 shutouts and your numbers are similar to everyone else, that means there were 9 games where they were double everyone else. So there was I thought there was a little bit of up and down in his season last year, a little bit of inconsistency. And I just thought in the playoffs, like, as the defense got exposed, so did he a little bit. And hey, listen, the Oilers are going to do that to a lot of people. It's not something that I look at and go, wow, like, I'm not worried about what Jacob Markstrom looks like to start this season, let's put it that way. Like, I think you'll get the guy that was a Vezina Trophy finalist. I don't think he's the kind of guy mentally that's going to dwell on one series that didn't go the way he wanted, that where the numbers didn't add up, didn't look like the guy all season. I don't think he's a guy that would carry that over from one season to the next. He's got as much as I had questions about Jacob Markstrom for a lot of his sort of young career in terms of how he played the game, I never had them about the mental strength side of things. I think he'll stick with the system that he uses and he'll be just fine. But in the come playoff time, especially with the likelihood you have to go through Edmonton, I think those questions will linger. And so, again, I'd worry about it if it was a goalie that I was worried about how he could handle that market or Canadian market or but I just don't have those concerns with Jacob Markstrom. Like, he's not a guy who's going to crumble because of the pressure or because questions are being asked about the second round. I don't think he's a guy who's going to change his game. And I'm not sure. I don't think he's a guy, obviously, coming off the year he had in the two of the past 3 years, that really has to change his game. So I think he's the least of concerns in Calgary. To me, that series was more about what the Oilers did without having to face Chris Tanev.
Last one here for you, Kevin, is Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and the NHL.com Canucks scribe joining us here on the Big Show in the morning. And this is a question about Jake Oettinger, who recently signed a 3-year deal with the Dallas Stars, and their new head coach, Pete DeBoer. I saw a little bit of a narrative on social media that Pete DeBoer doesn't handle goalies well. And you kind of go back and you look, and there was Corey Schneider when he was with the Devils, and then Martin Jones with the Sharks, and then Leonard and Fleury and the back and forth there when he was with the Golden Knights. Do you read into anything kind of there with Pete DeBoer and sometimes things not working out with his goaltenders, who would typically arrive with a little bit of kind of pomp around them?
It's kind of hard to ignore it, frankly, even in the goalie world, especially the last couple with how it went with Fleury and then how it ends with Lehner. To be honest with you, it is kind of hard to ignore, and it is not just a narrative for outsiders. It's a sort of narrative within the goalie and goalie coaching world a little bit. And, sometimes I do wonder how much of that is. We talked about structure and about, we've talked all the time about goalies not existing in a vacuum. What goes on in front of them matters. Like, Vegas was a really good team under Pete DeBoer. Vegas was never a great defensive team under Pete DeBoer. They had great defensemen, but they weren't even good defensively. They leaned heavy on Marc-Andre Fleury 2 years ago, which is why he was so worthy of the Vezina Trophy. And they leaned too heavily, in my opinion, on Robin Lehner, not just on a game-by-game scenario in terms of just not being great defensively and asking their goalie to bail them out a lot. But I thought just too often early last season, like for the first third of last year, Robin Lehner posted like his adjusted numbers relative to shot, you know, shot quality and defensive environment were Vezina Trophy worthy. Like he was really good through the first third, but there were signs throughout that if you kept riding him that hard, he wasn't going to last. And you, like, you didn't need a PhD in goaltending to see it. And that's exactly what panned out. So, my biggest question when it comes to Jake Oettinger and Scott Wedgwood, by the way, who, after making some changes in his game, I think it was January 28th, he made some adjustments in terms of his setup, his stance, his posture, and how he played things off the rush, and that fueled a lot of changes in his movement and his numbers from that point on. And it's not a tiny sample. It was 18 games. Like, Dallas doesn't get into the playoffs, don't forget, without Scott Wedgwood. He may have lost a bunch of them in overtime, but they kept throwing him to the Wolves, like the Leafs and Carolina and all these wagon teams, and Wedgwood kept getting them points. His numbers from January 28th on, after sort of having this change click, and it started in Arizona, were like the third best adjusted save percentage in the National Hockey League. So I think they've got a really good tandem there, not just Jake Oettinger. But the question to me is, they're also a tandem that benefited from good defensive structure. Like I said, Wedgwood outplayed his defensive environment, but it was still a good defensive environment. And that gives goalies predictability, knowing where things are going to come from on the ice. You hear me use that word a lot. Like, predictable environments help. Knowing that they can trust, even if it's a good look, because you're going to give up good looks. But if you limit where they come from and the type they are, and the goalie can trust that, what a massive difference that makes to them. And Dallas Stars goalies had that under Rick Bowness. Not throughout during the regular season. Even in the playoffs when Oettinger was getting shelled, there was an element of that. Dallas had this DNA defensively that was just built in, and they were able to sort of flip that switch in my mind in the playoffs and get back to it after sort of being in and out of it a lot during the regular season. Can they get back to it? Will they even try under Pete DeBoer? His MO has not been to be that type of coach. And that, I think, is in part why goalies have struggled and why those relationships have fizzled. The expectations have been high. The reality of how they play in front of them have not been good. And so I'm fascinated to see what type of defensive profile the Dallas Stars have under Pete DeBoer, because the Vegas Golden Knights under him did not have a good one. And I think that's a lot of, well, in the year it went really well when they had two number one goalies and they alternated back and forth, one of them ended up with a Vezina. But if you're counting on that type of goaltending, this goes back to the Vancouver thing.
Yeah.
If you're it's one thing to have that type of goaltending, but if you're going to count on it night in and night out, that's a really big ask, even for the best in the league.
Really appreciated the chat today, Kevin. It was nice to catch up after an off-season without. Enjoy the rest of it. And, hey, keep those kids on their toes as you get back to school, I guess, eh?
Yeah. One of them off to university, so sad day yesterday.
Oh,
but,
no.
Just means I'm getting old, boys. That's, I don't know what was hard. I don't know what was harder. I don't know what was harder, dropping off the one at university and saying goodbye, or then having to go to my skate on Monday night and seeing that everyone was half my age. I think I'm going to pay for the latter longer this week, but we'll recover for next week.
Well, how'd you do, though? Post a shutty or what? Clean sheet?
I survived. That's all that matters.
That's what we like to hear, man. Thanks for the time. Enjoy it, hey? We'll chat soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and also In Goal Magazine, our goalie guru, down the Alice Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner. For takeout or delivery, 403-248-3344, or dine into Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. The Canucks, another interesting team to me.
Yeah. Like,
blue line is...
Yeah. It's tough to get a scope. Like, there seems to be a lot of pessimism with that fan base that's been sort of since they came into the league, pretty much. But I'm more bullish than most people on Vancouver. Like, I think they're going to make the playoffs. I just think you look at Bruce Boudreau, what, you know, he's done throughout his illustrious coaching career. Like, that's the one thing he does excel at, is getting the most offensively out of his skill guys. So I look at Elias Pettersson have a big year, JT Miller, Bo Horvat potentially in a contract year. Curious to see what they have in Andre Kuzmenko coming over from the KHL at the ripe age of 26. Doesn't classify as a rookie, by the way. I do concur, like the back end is a major sore spot and there's going to be breakdowns, but I think it always helps when you have a Thatcher Demko. I just think you look at that Pacific and how wide open it is outside of maybe Calgary and the Edmonton Oilers, who I think are surefire playoff teams. Vegas, I still have questions. Anaheim, ditto. Los Angeles, the same conversation. Mm-hmm. I think there's opportunity for Vancouver, and maybe it's because I'm not in that market, but I do think they're better than they lead on, and I think they'll mask a lot of their deficiencies here. How do you feel about them?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. They're going to need good years from a lot of guys who were kind of so-so. Like, Quinn Hughes had a good offensive season, but it didn't necessarily feel like he was having the same 200-foot success that he had when he was playing with Chris Tanev, but that's something that you kind of get with age. He's still only 22, so there's a lot of room to grow there. But like Tucker Poolman's part of that decor with Dermott and Shen and Myers, and like they're big, but they're not going to be overly mobile. I don't know. It's going to be a work in progress for me. I just got so many questions about the blue line, and offensively, they're going to need guys to take a step forward. They're going to need a full 82 game season from an Elias Pettersson. They're going to need more from Pod Colson. They're going to need more from Hoglander. They're going to need Kuzmenko to be a relevant player here. So, I don't know. I'm intrigued to watch the Canucks, but I'm not as bullish as you as saying that I think that they're a playoff team. Listen, if there's four teams from the Pacific Division that happen to get in, I could certainly see a situation where somehow it comes out in the sense that they are a playoff team, but I don't know if I'm going to pencil them in to be top three into this division when, you know, even without Robin Leonard, I still quite like the Vegas Golden Knights. LA's taken a huge step, and I think the Flames and the Oilers are still very good teams in the West, in the Pacific as well. So, I don't know. I'd put the Canucks behind probably all four of those teams, even with the Leonard injury.
Yeah, that's fair. There's a lot of question marks. There's no doubt about that. But again, the constant is Thatcher Demko and sort of how he's evolving and, you know, becoming better and better and better. And I tend to agree with Kevin that I think you look at maybe some dark horse candidates for the Vezina Trophy. I think Thatcher Demko would be wise to maybe sprinkle a bit of coin on a futures look there, because I think he does have the potential to get to that next level, a la what we've seen. You know, I do think he's already better than Jake Oettinger, but I think we've seen, like, goalies are able to steal games and steal series. And I think when you have an upper echelon guy already, Thatcher Demko just coming into sort of the key points and, you know, his prime, I think anything is possible. Like, that's the fascinating thing to me about Vancouver, to your point, is, you know, there are people who think they can be a playoff team, and there are people who think they can be one of the worst teams in the league, right? Like, there's no, there doesn't seem to be a middle ground or consistency or consensus as to what we're going to see from this team.
How many starts would you be comfortable with for Thatcher Demko, though? Because there's no Yaro Halak backing him up, and I know last year he was hurt, and it was kind of up and down with COVID and all that type of stuff. But apart from that, they got, you know, Spencer Martin, Michael DiPietro, Colin Delia, Arturs Silovs, who's only 21. Those are their four signed goaltenders that could back up Thatcher Demko. Because, I don't know, 60 is a lot of starts for a goalie these days.
Yeah, I think you're looking at maybe 55. Like, I'm not a goalie guru, but I, you know, reading Canucks Twitter and watching a lot of the games last year, he only made six appearances, but people are very, very positive and feeling very optimistic about Spencer Martin, who's now 27, former third round pick of Colorado back in 2013. We've seen this a lot in recent memory. Like, I call it the Jordan Binnington, where you come of age later in your 20s, you know, closer to your 30s. Again, small sample size, but a 1.74, a 950 is pretty damn good. Obviously, Yaroslav Halak did not come as advertised. They tried their best to get him out of there. It happened. Ends up as a backup now with the New York Rangers. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, to your point, you need somebody solid behind Thatcher Demko, because, again, he is very, very taxed. That's one of the worst defensive teams in hockey. And as we've talked about, really not much has changed. So I think they're relying, and it's a big-time gamble in Spencer Martin, but they're relying on this guy to spell Thatcher Demko some nights off, right? Especially on back-to-backs here in the analytics era.
Yeah, 100%. And you look at, like, last year, he was very good for the NHL club. He had a 950 save percentage in six appearances of the 174 goals against. But prior to that, like, then the goals against was up closer to three in the AHL the year before, and only 15 starts. He had a 2.43 goals against and a 914 save percentage in 25 games with Abbotsford last season, which is very good numbers. But yeah, it's still to be proven, right? He's one of those guys who's had a cup of coffee, but even going from six games to 25 is a sizable jump.
It's a big leap.
Yeah.
It's, you know, he's got to do his best Dan Vladar expression to localize it here in Calgary. Like, Dan Vladar sort of came out of nowhere. I know he had a bit of a showing with the Boston Bruins, but I thought it was a cheeky pickup. And then lo and behold, I think he did a pretty serviceable job. Like, I know at the end of the day, the numbers didn't look phenomenal, but don't forget, like, the amount of big games that Dan Vladar played in to give Jacob Markstrom some rest. Now, ultimately, we saw what happened and transpired, you know, in the Stanley Cup playoffs and the Battle of Alberta. But for the most part, I thought it was a cheeky pickup. You need somebody like that because you know for sure, you know, Demko, Markstrom are your guys, but you need somebody who's going to be serviceable out there, we'll say, to give them nights off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need somebody to come in and make sure you can get a win. Like, I remember when I was growing up, and it was the Mika Kiprusoff show for 65 starts a year. And then if it was a Noodle start or a McLennan start, you're like, oh, well, that's probably an L. That's too bad, but just move on.
Yeah. It's a tough spot to be in as a backup, though, honestly. Like,
yeah, well, in different situations are different. Like, it's something that's always fascinated me in conversations with Kevin is he'll talk about how there's some goalies who play well in a situation where they only have to play every once in a while. And there's other goalies who need to have consistent reps to kind of, you know, get in their rhythm and stuff like that. So always interesting conversations with Kevin Woodley on goaltenders and the such. And then, man, they're a wild breed in the NHL, but they're arguably the most important position and probably the hardest to predict and project. Especially for you, like you got your fantasy hockey stuff coming up. You like doing the goalie rankings?
A nice tee-up, my dude. So, yes, starting on Friday, I'll be rolling out my top 250 via Sportsnet.ca. Later on next week, I got the Rookie Watch to come out. I have sleepers, bounce-back candidates. To answer your question, yeah, like it's – I think goaltending in general has become such a volatile position. In fact, I was writing sort of the bio for my top 250 yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the first time in a while, you could see a pair of goalies go in the first round of your fantasy draft. Now, I have Andrei Vasilevsky, I believe, off the top of my head, ranked 11th overall, and I have Shesterkin 12, but I think they're interchangeable, you know, however you feel comfortable in that setting. But, I mean, it's 1-2 and then the rest. Again, just the volatility with the position. I think Jacob Markstrom's a top five fantasy goalie, UC Saros. But these guys get, A, hurt a lot, and B, there always seems to be push from a tandem, right? It's a tandem timeshare type era where it might actually benefit you to wait in your draft to get sort of a tandem or handicap a tandem. You know, even another guy I would look at is Alexander Georgiev getting his first chance to be a number one. But the position has changed so much. You made an excellent point. Like Mika Kiprusoff, I like to correlate it to like the days of Marty Brodeur in fantasy hockey where you knew you were getting 70 starts a year. It's just so much more difficult to quantify goaltending, fantasy or not, just what it means to a team and how to attack it in a fantasy draft too.
I love your thoughts though, like especially if you're in a categories league and you got five goalie cats and six forward categories. Yeah, goalie in the first round is not a bad idea. Especially when you can go out and get two guys that you know are going to play 60 plus games and be lights out. Like I had a league last year that I strictly won because I stacked my goalies. Now, granted, the year prior, I was terrible, and I traded for extra picks, and I was able to use a little bit of draft capital to get some extra goalies in. But if you're in a categories league, I'm right there with you. I think that taking one of those top two guys, maybe not your first or second pick in the draft. You know, there's some good players out there. But if you're in the back end of first round, early in the second, I would certainly consider pulling the trigger. Yeah, I would.
Yeah, take the plunge, right? And I just think off the top of your head, like you could, there's only like, it's conceivable to suggest what, there's like 7, 8, 9, 10 remaining like bona fide number one goaltenders in this league, right? Like in this era of analytics, a lot of teams are going with the data and the, you know, the analytics and the stats to say, hey, we're going to go with a tandem or a timeshare. It's a lot different. So again, my biggest advice for those of you trying to attack goaltending is like, if you can get your hands on a bona fide stud, definitely above and beyond those two are the best in my opinion. And then you just, you know, there's question marks following that. Like I think Markstrom is going to be great. Ilya Sorokin's got a bright future, but what are the New York Islanders? Like, there's a lot more questions when you get later into the, you know, picks 25, 35, 45, 55, even like Jack Campbell in Edmonton. I don't know what to expect. Like, I think you're able to find value later on in your draft if maybe you're a bit more patient. Having, you know, said that, you, it would be smart to strategize and try to prioritize getting a bona fide stud as quickly as you can, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you don't want to end up at the end of the draft and you're looking and you're going, oh boy, this is, I've got myself a Philip Grubauer and a Nedeljkovic and a Martin Jones. And those are just L's all across the board. Oh, I got Karel Vejmelka in the 15th round. What is,
hey,
no.
He's a stud, man. He's a
you
stud.
You do not want that at all. He might be a stud, but he plays for the Coyotes, and you do not want a Coyotes goaltender on your team, ever.
Yeah.
We've gone far too long. What you want to talk about is next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Over the weekend, it was the beginning of, really in earnest, the college football season. And college football is chaos. There's been a lot of off-season chaos with the NCAA, and I don't understand a lot of it, so we're not going to get into it. But do you know why I love the return of college football, Nick?
Tell me.
Because the broadcasts are completely, undoubtedly unhinged. Like this. This was, I believe this was down in Texas. They were getting ready for a game. This was on, I believe it's the SEC Network. A little interview with John Daly.
For John, why don't you start us with the Hillbilly Headlines?
Well, I'm not going to lie, I'm drunk.
There you go. John Daly, right off the top. Well, not going to lie, I'm drunk. Then there was this, RG3, as they went to break following a touchdown in a different game on Saturday afternoon. Robert Griffin III, the former NFL quarterback, now doing analyst work.
And you're going to see they bring in the big quarterback. He makes the read. And what do you know, guys? It's an orgy in the end zone.
What? Sorry, pardon me. What was that? RG3?
An RG3 in the end zone?
What's...
Goodness.
Stop it, Patty. That's a flag. But yeah, that's why I love college football. There's a couple other ones in here, but I didn't get around to censoring them, so I definitely can't play them. But people who are just messing up their words, there was this. I don't even know what was going on in this one, but this was... That one's just audio. It's
that was during a jump around at Wisconsin. Tim Brando in the booth was trying to jump on the other guy. I don't know,
jump on his
like a
partner.
Horse.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love it because the clips are great. I love the celebrations. Like you mentioned, jump around is a big one. There's a school in Pittsburgh where they do a break in the game, and their stadium is right below a children's hospital.
Oh, it's like Iowa.
Iowa? Okay. Yeah. And they were playing in Pittsburgh, maybe. And the children's hospital is right by the building, and the whole stadium turns and waves at the children's hospital during a commercial break, and all the kids wave back. So
Florida sings Tom Petty, Don't Back Down, heading to the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of these things that I love across the NCAA, and the first weekend of the season is always chaotic, and you know, you get some new broadcasters in the booth. So that's why I love the NCAA, Nick.
You guys been to a college football game?
No, I have not. I have such a miserable list of sporting events I've actually attended. It's sad.
They're pretty sad.
So a couple of years ago, actually, funny enough, two Labor Days ago, I was in Austin for a bachelor party. And as you've known by now, Matt, I'm not a big football guy, but like the plan was like, let's go to a Texas A&M game. And I'm like, I'm so in. I've heard things about these legendary tailgates. And after gone through it, I can tell you the tailgate was insane. Now, the football game, a lot of fun. I'll be honest, halftime I left, I was like, I was just so bored. It was a rout. I'm like, get me out of here. Went to the bar. But the atmosphere is unlike anything I could even depict on these airwaves. Like it was tremendous. And again, the tailgate was just phenomenal. And that's why I think you're hearing some of these quotes. People are fired up. It's a good time of year to be a football fan.
Especially when you come out of the pandemic. And I know the NCAA had a little bit more of a normal season last year. But this is full tilt No questions asked. Pitter patter. Everyone's back in class. Everyone's back on campus. Everyone is back in the building. And it was great to see. I'm sure there were upsets. I'm sure there were blowouts. I'm sure there were some great performances. And eventually, some of these guys are going to be studs in the NFL. But I really did enjoy it for just that reason in particular. Listen, we only got a couple minutes, but what you want to talk about is next. It's brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Find residential and commercial safes of all sizes, including fire-rated safes, starting at just $375. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Alrighty here. A lot of questions about Nick here. Which is more likely to happen by the season opener? A Uyghur extension or Nick joining the flip-flop pals at his gym?
Man, I couldn't believe it, dude. Like, I'm doing leg day yesterday, and, like, flip-flop guy's buddy strolls in with socks on and flip-flops, and he was going to the stretch room. I'm like, this is becoming a thing at this gym. And so I left the gym and never went back. No, I won't be joining that frat, okay?
I drag my ass out of bed after a long weekend to drive into work, and then, pleasantly surprised, Nick is back for the week. My morning is set, boys. Thanks. There we go.
thank you.
This is one on fantasy hockey, and I was going to ask you this on Friday, but let's get to it. What's your opinions on a categories league against points? This individual's team points all the way. I play in both, and I think there's advantages to both. But you have to understand going in what your categories or what your system is and how to play it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I get that question a lot because I get questions about, like, what to do with my team. Well, it depends on your settings, right? Like, I love, you know, just like you, I love points leagues. I'm in a variety of different points leagues, but I do like the different categories. I'm big on power play points. I'm big on having goals, assists, points. Like, I just think it adds to the intrigue when there's a variety of different categories as opposed to just like a singular points league. But I respect it all, man. Like, fantasy hockey has grown so much over, say, even the last decade, where there's just a variation and a variety of different leagues. So that's probably where I'd sit in that conversation.
The one thing I'll say on points leagues is sometimes it's harder to find a system that works for goaltenders that make them relevant. I find them to have a lot less value in leagues like that. Yeah. That would be one of my biggest kind of bugaboos about the points league. But I've been doing fantasy hockey since I was in high school, and I did points for a long time and only started doing cats about 5-ish years ago. But
I'm bigger on the head-to-head than the roto, I'll say that.
Oh, I love head-to-head.
Roto guy.
Yeah, I like just going up against one person and getting a win or a loss in the column. I don't like
and
when
trash-talking, right?
Yeah, exactly. I don't like when it's just building up categories over the course of the season, the roto style. I'm right there with you. Oh, man, maybe we should start a league or something. This is crazy.
We could.
So weird.
We could.
How much does Vladar play this year? Any time for Wolf? I think Wolf probably gets a call if someone gets hurt, but until then, I would say Vladar is the backup.
That's a great fantasy name, Wolf of Wall Street. I like that.
Yes, sir.
I'm big on the puns in fantasy hockey names. So
it's got to be, right?
Yeah.
Someone woke up on Sunday and went, oh no, I got to make all my NFL bets. Don't worry, it's next week. And we're also working on something really cool for Thursday that I'm going to try and make a little bit of a feature when Thursday night football rolls around. I'm not going to give you any more details because it's in the works and I don't want to spoil it, but I'm trying to do something that I think will be cool. Okay. Finally, Nick, we'll end here. I need more context. Were they flip-flops or were they slides?
What's the difference?
Well, flip-flops have the one that goes between the big toe and the second toe. That right, the thong style.
Yeah, you didn't want to say it.
And then the slides are your classic Nike or Gucci, whatever. I'm sure you rock Gucci slides. That seems like a Nick Alberga thing. Yeah, Gucci slides.
Okay, so I don't understand there was a difference. It slides. Mm. So not the one with the thong, the other one.
That's good. I think that's probably preferred, but also.
But still, just wear shoes.
Yeah,
also wear trainers.
Just wear shoes.
What about Crocs? Crocs.
This person is texted
I've seen
in
that at the gym too.
This person is texted in and says there's a huge difference. So this is an important question, Nick. You're gonna have to go and ask your pal. Hey man, you
I'll
ever thought about thongs on your feet instead of slides or
I'll go write a thesis paper on it.
Yeah, let him know.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to that tomorrow.
Okay.
Lots of research, okay? Lots of notes. Maybe some audio if you could, a couple of interviews.
Okay.
No?
I will get the brooms out for a softball. We got our second game of the playoffs coming up tonight.
Oh, boy.
It's a three-game series, so going for the sweep tonight. Could only wonder what kind of story I'm going to come back with tomorrow.
Incredible. Here's the slate for the rest of the day, guys. Blair and Barker coming up next. That'll go from 9 to 11 o'clock. We're going to have a little bit of CBS at 11. Then that'll go until about 1 o'clock. It's going to be Jays Plus at 1 o'clock. And then it's going to be the Eric Francis Show at 2. It returns for Horse Racing Alberta. And you don't want to miss this. 2:30, Daryl Sutter is going to join Eric Francis for an interview, teeing up the season. If you can't listen at 2:30, that interview is going to be on the Big Show podcast stream. So make sure you subscribe to the Big Show on Spotify, Apple, Google, or Amazon. Pat Steinberg also makes his return to the station with Logan Gordon. They'll have 2 hours of Flames talk from 3 to 5. And then it'll be the Jays game as they take on Baltimore looking for a 6th straight win. So enjoy it. Nick, we'll talk tomorrow. For Patty and for Alex, my name is Matt Rose. Thanks for listening. Blair Barker's next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.